Daily Scramble Live with Tyler Russell and Jason Fetty. Today's guest,
Nathaniel Rateliff, will be on the show. You know his new single, SOB.
Ladies and gentlemen, Tyler Russell and Jason Fetty.
Good morning. Today on the show, we feature some rare tracks in Waldman's musical wardrobe of wonderfulness.
Yeah, and Nathaniel Rateliff, the guy who sings Son of a Bitch, you know that guy?
Yeah.
Jason's going to chat with him later
on. I'm excited. And then I'm going to sing the Police Blotter, and we're going to say, because the Pope's in town, we're going to say, good Yontif, Pontiff. It's Yom Kippur, everybody. Woohoo!
Daily Scramble Live on KX93.5.
On KX93.5, your Daily Scramble News now.
First up in local news this morning, the Laguna Beach Chamber of Commerce and Starfish Laguna present the 2015 Taste of Laguna tomorrow, September 23rd, on the grounds of Tivoli 2. That starts at 4:30 p.m. for VIP admission. That's followed by general admission at 5:30. You can catch a glimpse into Laguna's top chefs and how they approach the art of cuisine. Little bites will be offered from Laguna's finest chefs and restaurants. The festivities wrap up at 9 p.m., you can grab tickets online at the Chamber's website, lagunabeachchamber.org, under the Events tab. If you buy them in advance, they're $20 less. Again, they're $20 more if you go to the door at Taste of Laguna, which is Wednesday, September 23rd. Performances by Ken Garcia and the Fitchett Woods. The Foo Fighters, who embarked on a world tour in support of their latest album, Sonic Highways, finally made its way to Southern California, hitting up Honda Center in Anaheim on Saturday night for a sold-out show. The band received a warm, roaring welcome from Orange County fans, and they had exclusive merchandise. This is pretty cool. T-shirts displaying the Foo Fighters logo with the Angels halo looped around it, as well as a few other specialty items. Though the Foos cleverly give each city the same localized treatment, Saturday night really was a hometown show because, of course, drummer Taylor Hawkins grew up in Laguna Beach. And Dave Grohl let everybody know mid-set. He closed out the evening by thanking Orange County for letting him borrow Taylor Hawkins for the last 20 years. He said, "We never say goodbye. You know what we say?" Then they played Everlong. In national news, the former owner of a peanut company in Georgia was sentenced to 28 years in prison on Monday for his role in a salmonella outbreak that killed 9 people and sickened hundreds, a rare instance of jail time in a food contamination case. Stuart Parnell, 61, who once oversaw Peanut Corporation of America, and his brother Michael Parnell, 56, who was a food broker on the company's behalf, were convicted on federal conspiracy charges in September 2014 for knowingly shipping salmonella-tainted peanuts to customers. During the trial, prosecutors said the brothers covered up the presence of salmonella in their company's peanut products for years, even creating fake certificates showing they were uncontaminated despite laboratory results. The Parnells said they have never knowingly endangered customers. Did you eat any peanuts last year?
No, but it's like that's so similar to the Volkswagen story that's going about at the moment too.
Which is that?
The Volkswagen, and I haven't got the exact details, but Volkswagen, the corporation, obviously the German corporation that makes automobiles, have been caught red-handed fiddling with their machinery and their engines and adding some little part of a widget which bypasses what do they call the stuff that comes out the back of the car? Exhaust.
The exhaust.
Right.
Yeah.
Sorry, I'm not even awake yet. The exhaust out of the back of the car, they fiddle with it and so that people pass smog when they ought not to. Heads are going to roll.
Well, don't eat peanuts.
Don't eat peanuts and don't drive a Volkswagen.
Yeah, that's the moral.
Don't eat your peanuts in your Volkswagen.
Finally, world news. A 91-year-old woman has been charged with 260,000 counts of murder.
Oh, my God.
On allegations she was a member of the Nazi SS who served in Auschwitz, according to German prosecutors. Her name is Schleswig Holstein. And on Monday...
That's not true.
That's her name. That's her name. She was a radio operator for the camp commandant from April to July in 1944. And prosecutors argue that her, the accused, wasn't disclosed due to... Hang on. She can be charged an accessory because she helped the death camp function. Crazy.
She was a DJ.
I don't think she played music. Wow. 260,000 murders.
Yeah.
91 years old.
Complicit in the whole crime. Well, they've got to keep putting him in jail. You can't allow them to go just because they're old, you know.
Is just, that so?
Yeah. Age doesn't, you know, I don't think there's no way you can just say, oh, it's a long time ago, can you?
I mean, no, but could you say what good is going to be done from putting a 91-year-old woman in jail?
It's just the law. You broke the law, you go to jail. There's no statute of limitations on mass murder.
Do you think that she, like, knew what she was doing? Do you think she volunteered to be a radio operator? I mean, like, no, I mean this seriously. Like, a young girl in 1944 in Germany is told, hey, go man our radios. You know?
She wasn't that young. She was 20 years old in 1944. Yeah. But anyway, I could care less. Put her in jail. She probably doesn't know what she's doing now, so that's good.
That's probably true. I'm interested in that one. There was another case similar to it that this article quoted, but they do this. They find massive counts of murder, and they put people in prison.
While there are still survivors of the camps alive, you have to send the camp commandants, the people complicit, to jail.
Sure.
I mean, they're all, you know, 10 years from now, they're all going to be dead.
So next hour, we're going to do a story that makes Jason very happy, but we're not going to do it right now because you're driving with your kids to
and
school.
And it's too early, yeah.
But it's about the Prime Minister of England.
And a pig.
Perhaps you saw the news
yesterday. It's beautiful.
Let's finish the headline, though.
Okay.
A guy returned blank. He found in a box of wings. So Domino's gave him free pizza for a year. What did he find in the box of wings, Jason?
Oh, my God. What could he have found? Was it jewelry?
Okay, finish the headline.
Was it jewelry?
Close.
A ring or somebody's necklace?
It was $1,300 in cash.
What?
It was $1,300 in cash in his box of wings that he ordered from Domino's.
And he took it back there.
Yeah, so it was a guy in Berkeley.
Yeah.
His name's Mike Vegas.
Mm.
And he ordered some pizza and wings from Domino's on Sunday. But when he got the wings, he realized he had to go to work. So he got the wings, put them in his fridge, and went to work and left them at his house for
right,
some time.
Right, happened to me before, yeah.
That's never happened to me.
I've bought
How
food.
Do you order pizza and then realize you have
yeah,
to go?
I've done that before, and it's wound up in the fridge, yeah.
That's never happened to me. I eat it. So anyway, he went to work, he came back, and when he got home, he looked inside, and yes, there were $1,300 in cash. Then he posted on Facebook, what should I do with this? And everybody said, keep it, but he's a good dude, and he took it back. And the manager gave him free pizza for 1 year.
Who did the $1,300 belong to?
The delivery guy.
Really? Well, you know what?
Who was on his way to the bank.
What would you have done? I personally, I must tell you, would have taken back $1,300. But I do have a limit. I mean, you know, could you get in trouble for that? It's not stealing. You were given the money.
Well, apparently the other part to the story is that the delivery guy from an unknown number was calling him all day while he was at work saying, hey, I left $1,300. So at that point, yes, of course you give it back. But
what was a delivery guy for Domino's doing with $1,300 in a box? This whole thing sounds a little fishy.
Very good question.
It doesn't sound right, does it?
No, not quite.
Yeah.
But he got it back, and he got free pizza for a year, which is probably worth about $56, so.
This is, right, this is a scene out of Breaking Bad, isn't it? Except it would be $13 million in a thing.
Right. And there would be much more happening.
Yeah, there clearly is. Wasn't there a pizza restaurant or chicken restaurant?
Los Pollos Hermanos.
Los Pollos Hermanos.
Gustavo Fring.
That's him. Very exotic.
My favorite show.
Yeah.
All right, that's your news today.
Cool. Great. Well, there's the news. Lovely.
Next hour, we've got more. That is not appropriate for 720. Daily Scramble Live is on now on KX93.5. Daily Scramble, Daily Scramble Live. Daily Scramble, Daily Scramble Live. Yeah, that's Jason's voice on our jingle. He's also going to sing the police blotter coming up in a bit. My absolute favorite thing that we
it's
do.
It's all me.
On Daily Scramble Live.
Is there any way I can get like some sort of money for this?
Yeah, we residuals. Can. We'll go ahead and report the songs play
yep.
to Media Base.
If you could.
And you have to sign up. You're already an ASCAP artist, right? Or a BMI artist?
ASCAP.
You're an ASCAP artist?
I'm an ASCAP.
Yeah. Sounds like a Shakespearean insult.
Exactly. I never thought of it that way before, did you?
You
just occurred to me.
You wily ASCAP.
Yes.
Yeah, you are, right?
Look at you. How can you go out like that? Where's your ASCAP?
Just tell. It's raining out. For people who are just catching up, ASCAP is a service in which you report to in order to get royalties
get money, yeah.
as an artist.
Okay, I've remembered the story that we were trying to
You
remember.
Did?
Yeah.
All right.
Okay, so yesterday I wrote a letter to somebody, I wrote an email to a gentleman who I wanted to ask about something. It doesn't really matter what it was. It was a business thing. So I don't even want to go into it. But it was just a business thing. It was a simple email. Hey, I'd like to talk to you about this. Would you like to come into the station and have a chat about it? Finished.
Could this person be listening?
I don't know. Maybe.
Does it matter?
No.
Okay.
So that was the little business email. And the email prior to that, I had written to somebody. I'm going to Italy soon with my wife. And somebody I'd bumped into in the street talked about this. And he said, hey, I know loads of good places in Florence. Why don't you email me? And I'll.
I remember the story.
All right. Why don't you email me and I'll tell you a few places and then that'll be great because I don't know anything about Florence. I've never been there before, so I emailed the guy about Florence, and I wrote blah blah blah. Be lovely to hear you say. Let's meet up in town sometime. Ciao. Right, as in ciao, you know, goodbye.
Yeah.
Italian, little cheesy maybe, but just being friendly. I don't know this guy very well, so. And my next email was to somebody on a very serious business thing, blah, blah, blah. And I wrote, thank you very much. I hope to hear from you soon. Ciao. And then I hit send and I realized I'd just like, it's like writing to the bank or something or, you know, here's my lady's car payment. Ciao.
And then ending it with like a kissy face.
Right. So I wrote,
XOXO, Jason.
I wrote, ciao. And then I had to write another email back for the same guy saying, sorry about the ciao. It was meant for somebody else, somebody Italian. Sorry.
Did this guy end up responding
Nobody
to you?
Nobody has written back to me.
Not one person.
The first guy's gone, ciao. What a knobhead.
And then you're trying to recover.
Completely terrible.
That's the worst thing is when you send an email, you realize something's wrong with it. Like, let's say for me, for example, I'll email a bunch of people the same thing, like a bunch of band managers saying, mm-hmm. hey, can you play our gig? Hi, Dan. Hi, Tracy. And then, oops, it says, hi, Dan, hi, Tracy, right. and hi, Alex in the same email because I've just been copying and pasting. It's so embarrassing.
It is embarrassing.
And you can't write, and you write back, oh, I'm so sorry, and you have an explanation, and by then, it's over.
I think people kind of understand that stuff. I had a terrible experience with that once. With it being Yom Kippur, I'll tell a Jew story.
Okay.
So David Kirschenbaum is a record producer of notes. He produced some big records. Who made that record? I want a fast car. Tracy Chapman.
I love that
first
song.
First album. Huge record. Kirschenbaum. Like, if you Google him, tons of records. So my friend Evan, who was working with Kirschenbaum on something, said to me, listen, send Kirschenbaum a record, one of your CDs. He's expecting it. But send it to this Northern California address. So I sent it to this Northern California address and never heard back from him, never heard a thing about it. So then Evan emails me and he says, did you send the record? And I said, yeah, I sent it to him. And he says, well, David says he never received it. So I write back to Evan, he's a lying scumbag and a Jew bastard. Now, bear in mind, Evan's Jewish, I'm Jewish, David's Jewish, so we're all racist, we're all entitled, it's expected of us. So I read this back, and then hit send, and then I realise I've CC'd David Kirschenbaum. You can imagine the grovelling I had to do after that, and explain, as I just did, hey, David, we're all Jews, it's sort of locker room humour, blah, blah, blah. And about 3 weeks later, David Kirschenbaum unsubscribed to my emails.
One time I BCC'd you on an email to someone.
I remember
because
this.
I wanted you to secretly see what I was right. sending, and Jason replied all, no problem, guys. Like, yeah. It's like, no.
And, you've got to keep your eye on all of that stuff.
Yeah, you
it's
do.
Really a thing, isn't
you
it?
You do. One more trick for copying and pasting fails in email. It changes the font just a little bit if you copy and paste from one email to another. So you can actually tell if you look closely in Gmail, at least in Gmail, that someone has copy and pasted one email into another email. And as a user, you should make sure that you've duplicated the font.
You can fix that by right-clicking and then going to undo style.
Oh, wow.
On Mac, yeah.
Email tips this morning.
I know, and no emails before 8 a.m. That's my rule.
Well, don't send him any yet then. Coming up, Jason's going to sing the police blotter. I cannot wait. It's my favorite thing. Last week was a ukulele. This week, you got a real guitar?
I brought the guitar with this. Yeah.
What's your tuning?
Oh, it's just the usual EBAB, whatever it's called.
Regular tuning?
Regular tuning. Thanks cool. for asking.
You're welcome.
Yeah.
This is new from Silver Sun Pickups. It's so good. The song's called Better Nature. They just sold out show, or Nightlight, rather. They just sold out show last week at the Observatory.
Let's open the only in Laguna file.
Good morning, Jason Fetty.
Hi. Good morning.
Hey.
How are you doing?
I'm well, thank you.
Yeah.
Great. Pleasantries.
I know. It's because I'm feeling a little bit this morning, but getting through it, waking up, because now it's time for Jason Sings the Police Blotter. Is that what we call this?
I don't think it has an official name.
The only in Laguna
well,
song.
First, the only in Laguna file. And then you'll sing the police blotter.
Okay.
This morning, in the Only in Laguna file, which is where we highlight local crimes of naivety and innocence that really could only happen in our beach town.
It's the Only in Laguna smile.
Yeah, that's better.
Okay.
This happened in the 31900 block of Virginia Way. Mm-hmm. Do you know what else is around the 31900 block of Virginia Way?
Your house.
Yeah.
Yes, it is.
9:51 p.m. A caller reported, and it wasn't me who called, reported that a man was standing next to a street eating a rock. Martin, 53 years old, of Los Angeles, was arrested for being under the influence of a controlled substance.
Wow. It's not illegal to eat a rock, is it?
I don't think it is.
I wish I'd seen that. That would have been a great police blotter sing song.
Well, this one just came out this morning.
That's why you didn't ask me.
Yeah.
Because you knew that I didn't have time to have written that song.
You could write the rock story on Friday.
The fact that it's got a rock in it just is, you know, immediately, you know, it's rock. It's rock and roll.
Why would you call the police if you see a man eating a rock? Would you? Would you call the police?
If I saw a man eating a rock?
Yeah.
No, but health and services, somebody, a nurse would probably.
You call animal control?
Something. I mean, you'd want him to get help, wouldn't you?
Yeah. I might go up to him first, unless he looked like a dangerous rock eating man.
Yeah. It must be very bad for your teeth. Probably want a dentist.
Call a dentist instead of the police. All right, what's your story, Jason, and what are you going to sing?
Okay, so September 13th, very serious problem here in town. West Street on the 31500 block. A burglary, my friend. 5:45 a.m. Entry was made through a rear garage door overnight. A wetsuit and a bicycle was stolen. The victim estimated the losses as $1,700. It describes the name of the type of bicycle. Also, not important. The important thing is that a wetsuit and a bicycle were stolen. And because of that, I was inspired at midnight last night to write the following song.
Do you have a style today?
Yeah, sort of, you know, I think I'm thinking like 60s English psychedelia. Maybe, I don't know. Sometime late in the night, somebody stole a wetsuit and a bike, and then he was gone, fast and free. And he went down to the water, and he rode right out to sea. He was an underwater bicycle man. Man, pedaling with the pilchards way beyond the sand, underwater bicycle man. Everybody has heard somebody complain that in Laguna there's no bicycle lanes, but there's
there's one man who's found a way. He simply slips into some neoprene and he rolls right down the drain. He is a underwater bicycle man. Underwater bicycle man. Pedaling with the porpoise way beyond the sand. Underwater bicycle man. And he glides like an immortal with a cycle and a snorkel. Underwater bicycle man.
Yes!
Underwater bicycle man, an instant classic.
Come on, yes! So good! Every time, I'm blown away every time because I know at what hour you write these.
Oh, it's so ridiculously late.
And I'm blown away.
There's Ava and I sitting on the floor of my office at home, singing and laughing and just having a great time. It's great fun.
Your imagination just takes these to a ridiculous level. That was the story. If people are just tuning in, it was a story about a guy who stole a wetsuit and a bicycle from a garage in our local police
squad. That's right. And he became.
And now he's an aquatic superhero.
Underwater bicycle man.
Pedaling with the porpoise. So good. You made it political about Laguna bike lanes.
I wasn't going to do a second verse, but I thought, you know what? It's not a laugh out loud song, so let's just make it a song, you know.
Yeah.
Underwater bicycle man. It's a thing. It could be a thing.
I love it so much.
Yeah.
Well done, Jason Fetty.
Thanks. It's really fun to do.
Jason sings the police blotter every Tuesday and Friday here on Daily Scramble Live, and it's our favorite.
Daily Scramble, Daily Scramble Live. Daily Scramble.
Cool, that's the sound of Aqueduct and a track called Simple Animal. It's Daily Scramble Live with me, Jason Fetty, and you, Tyler Russell. Let's go to the phone, shall we? Hello?
Hey, just calling to say that's a great song. You should write that. That stuff should be published. That's a good one.
We're keeping all of them, and we're gonna make CDs that we're going to give away eventually to promote the show.
That is the essence of Laguna Beach right there.
Isn't that fun? I love doing this, man. Thanks for calling in. It makes me feel good, but I love doing it, and we are going to do a CD. What we'll do is we'll do games and give away CDs because I think that'll be fun, yeah.
Right on. Great tune.
What's your name?
Chad.
Chad, thanks for listening, man.
Yeah, you got it.
Bye. Of course, we're talking about there, Jason singing the police blotter. Underwater Bicycle Man was today's tune. And if you missed it, we'll play it for you again in the next hour. But we love doing it, and we're glad you like it too.
It just goes to show that I work best under pressure because if you said to me, write a song about Underwater Bicycle Man, you've got until Christmas. It'd never happen.
Yeah.
It'd be done the day before, you know.
Anybody can call our show anytime, and we do appreciate feedback, but only if it's positive.
Yeah,
949-715-5936 at 715-KXFM. You can also text that same number.
Yeah, thanks, Chad. It's time for, have you got your finger on the button?
Here's the sorbet of the day.
It's time for that. The sorbet of the day. If you, like me, wake up flustered and obsessing over silly stuff, here's a quick cerebral sorbet. It's a cleanser for your mental palate. It's a brain peel. Yes, it's a brain peel.
For your
brain. All right, you ready? Everybody, take a little moment, little deep breath. This is a quote from Winston Churchill, believe it or not. You should be ready and prepared to meet your maker. Whether your maker is prepared for the ordeal of meeting you is another matter. Winston Churchill said that.
Did you use Winston today because of the news, the English news?
Oh, good link, but no, I never thought of that yet.
All right, well, coming up in less than 10 minutes, we'll tell you what's going on with England's current prime minister. That is quite scandalous.
You're going to love it.
That was the sorbet of the day.
All right, Jason.
Right.
Are you ready?
Big stuff. Aside from the fact that the Pope is in America right now.
Okay.
That's a big story.
You think this is bigger?
That's a big, serious story, which we could talk about, but probably isn't time. You can read the papers for that one. But it's a big thing. He's going to address Congress, the Pope.
Jason's been talking about this story since yesterday afternoon when it first broke, looking forward to when we could discuss it on our show.
I thought it was a joke because a good friend of mine posted it, and he's good for jokes. But this, okay, basically.
Shall I read it? I have the text. I can read it.
Do you have the text?
Yeah, I can read it.
All right, go on then.
You want me to read it? Or do you want to read it?
Go on, you read it.
Let's try to read it at the same time.
No.
Go on.
According to a new shock biography, England's Prime Minister David Cameron once put his private parts in a dead pig's mouth.
Yeah, let's just say that again, shall we? The British Prime Minister has been accused by someone very close to him, a Lord in the House of Lords, Lord Ashcroft, of putting a... it says he stuck a private part of his anatomy in a pig's mouth in a student initiation ceremony at Oxford University.
Right. It was a dining club. The Piers Gaveston Society.
Lovely.
And the pig was apparently on the lap of another member of the society while he performed the act.
Yeah. Do you know that nobody in Britain is shocked by this news?
Is that true?
It's weariness. That's what this been. That's been the response, the overwhelming response.
Just like a big sigh,
it's
a collective
been like,
sigh.
Who's surprised by this? I mean, if you found out, it's a bit like if you found out Dick Cheney had shot somebody in the face.
Well, he almost, didn't he do that?
He did do that, and everybody just went, okay, yeah, that sounds about right for Dick Cheney. And it's about the same thing for Cameron, frankly.
Is he a shocking individual? Is he not?
No, he's just a posh lad. He's part of the British aristocracy, really.
Yeah.
And he's just, you know, the entitled millionaires and all that. He's one of those guys, so who's surprised? And it's always the Conservatives, isn't it? Anthony Weiner, that New York guy, he was the exception that proved the rule. Remember the...
yeah, I remember.
The New Yorker...
Can't forget Weiner.
With the photographs of his Weiner on Twitter. Anyway, so we're calling it... So we're calling this... The fact that the British Prime Minister appears to have put his penis in the mouth of a dead pig, which was dead, and a pig. we're calling it our own Britain's Bay of Pigs, or... Swine 11, should we call it that?
No.
Let's call it that.
Oh, my
God. No?
The spokesperson for the Prime Minister's office?
Wouldn't want his job right now.
I thought we'd have a great quote here, but instead said, I'm not going to dignify this book by offering a comment. The Prime Minister is focused on getting on with the job of running the country.
What's wrong, Piglet? Asked Pooh. Concerned. David Cameron won't stop texting me, said Piglet, his ears flapping in the wind like banners. Do you remember that? Winnie the Pooh.
Yeah, I understood.
Winnie the Pooh and a very scared Piglet today. Oh, it's just like, it does not get... You just want radio silence.
You can't write it.
It's just beyond belief. Anyway, they're accusing him of smoking pot and having parties with cocaine and... all kinds
what
of stuff.
What kind of book is this? Why would he... Did he agree to having this book be published about it?
It was written by a guy called Lord Ashcroft, who was passed over for a big government job earlier on in the year. And he's upset with Cameron. In fact, when he first wrote the book and he was doing the press going around, he was calling it Cameron's obituary.
Oh, wow.
So it's all just nonsense. And in the meantime...
And very vindictive.
Vindictive and stupid and just beyond... And the thing is that, you know, Cameron's been a terrible prime minister, frankly, in my opinion. And there's lots more to go at him about, really. But they're going after him, the press now are going after him about this. They've no choice, frankly. But the guy that's the opposition party leader, Jeremy Corbyn, he's very left-wing. More left-wing than any politician or leading politician Britain's had for many years. So the papers, who are quite... sort of right wing, have been going after him for the last couple of months. But now they've had to go for this Cameron story. Or David Hammeron, if you pardon the pun. Hammeron.
No. His name's David Cameron. Ham.
Hammerammer.
I got it. I got it.
David Hammerammer run.
All right, are you happy we did it? We did the story.
Yeah, I mean, I can't make it funnier than what it is.
No, you can't.
The story is, it was a pig and he did it.
And that's the story.
And he's the
Prime
Minister.
There's no jokes necessary.
I mean, what? I don't know.
Let's finish the headline, shall we?
Yeah.
A woman jumped out of a moving car because of a blank and left her 9-year-old behind. Wait for it.
Okay, finish the headline.
She jumped out of a moving car and left her 9-year-old behind in the car.
Because of a what?
Did she burn herself with a cigarette?
No.
No? Did she... Was there a... What else could there be in the car that make her jump out of the car? She's not suicidal, this woman, then.
Nope.
Was there a wasp in the car?
A spider.
Spider!
There was a spider on her shoulder. 35-year-old woman in Indiana started backing out of her driveway in reverse, saw a spider on her shoulder, freaked out, and instead of putting the car back in park, just left it how it was rolling, jumped out of the driver's door, and left her 9-year-old son in the back seat. He tried to climb into the front to stop the car, ended up hitting the gas instead of the brake, and then the car sped up and backed into a school bus that was driving by. And the kid's fine. Only minor injuries.
I'm glad to hear it.
But, wow.
Yeah. I can't get the idea that the British Prime Minister put his penis in a pig's mouth. And the obvious end of the... I mean, obviously, this is Britain's Bay of Pigs, you know, clearly. The obvious end of this story is to say, that's all, folks. KX93.5. It's KX93.5. We are Laguna's only FM radio station. On Sunday, June 14th, that's this coming Sunday, the Segerstrom Centre for the Arts is welcoming Britt Floyd. Britt Floyd, an incredible Pink Floyd cover band who celebrate 5 decades of Pink Floyd in their shows, playing tunes from Dark Side of the Moon, Wish You Were Here, Animals, The Wall, The Division Bell, and lots of Pink Floyd musical surprises. And the show really looks like a classic Pink Floyd show. And I'm very happy to welcome Damien Darlington to this show right now. He's on the phone. He's the guitarist and creative driving force behind Britt Floyd. Hi, Damien. How you doing, man?
I'm very good, thanks.
Did I surprise you with my British accent?
A little, yeah. It wasn't what I was expecting to hear, a voice from back home, as it were.
It's pretty good, isn't it? I'm from Kentucky, actually, but I've been practicing my accent.
Oh, well, I can tell that now that you mention it, yeah, there's definitely a real southern drawl in there creeping through.
There's a bit of a twang. Where are you from? You sound like you're from the Midlands.
Just above the Midlands. I live in Cheshire, so beginning of the northwest.
Right. It's officially the north, actually, so we can be friends. I'm from Leeds originally.
All right, okay.
How are you doing, man? You are getting to see this country, aren't you? I'm looking at your tour dates, and you've been everywhere.
Yeah, certainly. You know, I'm getting to the point where I've played pretty much every major city in the US, I would say, by this point. So this tour's 101 shows in total. So
wow.
A lot of miles covered.
I want to ask you about the show itself, but first of all, I want to ask you how... You're the musical director of this show, right?
Yeah.
Do you guys play parts? I mean, is there a Rick Wright and a Nick Mason and a Gilmore? Or do you sort of share the load when it comes to solos and the way the music works?
Yeah, I mean, certainly when it comes to the guitar side of things, I mean, as well as being the musical director, I'm one of the guitar players and I do some of the lead vocals as well. But the sort of between myself and the other guitarists in the band, the lines are a blurred between, you know, whether it's David Gilmour parts or Tim Renwick or Snowy White. They're the guitarists who played with Floyd live over the years. So there's a bit of a blurring going on there. But obviously when it comes to the drums and keyboards and bass, it's very much, you know, you've got a Rick Wright, you've got a Nick Mason, et cetera, et cetera.
So you guys are real sticklers for getting the parts right and making this really sound like a Pink Floyd show with the kind of the energy that comes from younger men. Obviously you guys are younger than Pink Floyd are now.
Yeah, I suppose so. You know, we certainly are. You know, there's a great attention to detail in what we do. That's part of the art of it, is getting out all those little nuances correct. And, you know, whether it comes to the actual notes you play, the sounds that you're recreating from all those iconic studio albums, and also the visual side of things. You know, there's a lot of detail goes into that as well. So, and you know, yes, I suppose we're a bit younger than Pink Floyd are now, so there's a little bit more energy up there on stage, perhaps. But, you know, Pink Floyd still do... When Roger Waters and David Gilmour still go out and tread the boards, it's still sort of an exciting thing to witness.
Stop.
It's KX 93.5. If you're just tuning in, you'd be surprised to hear that that's not Pink Floyd and the classic track Money. That's Brit Floyd, a British Pink Floyd cover band who are playing at the Segerstrom Centre on Sunday, this coming Sunday. When I say a cover band, this is a huge undertaking and a massive show, including all the Pink Floyd pyrotechnics and played absolutely perfectly by the band, as you heard then. Got Damien Darlington on the phone with me right now from the band. He's the musical director, and we've been chatting about how they put this show together. I wanted to talk to you about putting the music together because, obviously, it has to be perfect, right? I mean, growing up, I was a huge Pink Floyd fan. And we're almost like Trekkies, aren't we? I mean, it's got to be right. We don't want to come there and find you noodling around and playing solos that aren't, you know, Gilmour's. So we can sing along to the solos. So we know them that well, you know.
Yeah, definitely. And then, you know, sort of like air drum, the drum fills and all the rest right. of it, all that aspect of it.
Right, and the visuals, because they were famous, are famous for their incredible stage shows and inflatables and pyrotechnics and lights and stuff and being sort of cutting edge. Do you copy their stuff? Do you use their light shows, or is it your own stuff?
It's all our own stuff, but, you know, we're obviously hugely inspired by what they did. You know, we're trying to recreate as best we can the visual element of the show as well as the music, you know. So we've got the round screen, you know, that you project video onto. We've got a sort of an arch lighting design, which is very reminiscent of the 94 Pulse Tour. You know, we've got the inflatable pig.
I was going to ask about the inflatable pig. You've got the inflatable. I suppose you couldn't do a show without it, really, could you? From, was it Animals?
Well, the tour. It's certainly, that's the first time the pig made an appearance with Pink Floyd, but obviously they carried on using it right up until the Pulse Tour. And we try and use it whenever possible. It isn't always possible. Some of the venues are a little small to accommodate it, you know, in the wings of the stage, but, you know, we get him out whenever we can.
Well, it's exciting to think that you get to see that thing. It's so iconic. Well, the music never gets boring, so, you couldn't have picked a better band, in my opinion anyway, to go out there and sort of produce the shows that people can't really see anymore because Floyd are not really touring as much. Like, the logistics of it must be incredible. You go from city to city, you've got to set up this enormous show. The crew must be amazing.
Yeah, we have some great guys working for us. You know, and like I say, there's trucks, there's tour buses, like, moving from place to place, and we get there at 9 o'clock in the morning, and it all has to go up and be ready by the afternoon for our sound check. So yeah, it's a big job, but as I say, we've got some really sort of talented guys working for us and helping us put all this together.
I've been watching videos online, and it's really an incredible show, and lots of energy. That's what's really impressive about it, is the energy that you bring to the thing. I think people are going to be absolutely blown away. The show is on June 14th, that's this Sunday, at the Segerstrom Hall in Costa Mesa there. Tickets are on sale right now. Wow, it's just going to be a killer thing. Thanks for talking to me, mate. I've got one more question. Have Pink Floyd, any of the members of Pink Floyd, seen the show?
There's nobody been along in person, but we know they've seen our DVDs, and I've met the guys at Pink Floyd over the years. I even played at David Gilmour's 50th birthday party back in the 90s and played with Rick Wright on that occasion too on stage. So, you know, I've met the guys over the years, and you know, they know about us and they know what we do, and I think they sort of approve, you know, in their way.
I have no doubt they do. It's a true tribute. So thanks for doing it, and once again, June 14th, Segerstrom Hall, Brit Floyd. Thanks for talking to me, Damien.
It's been a pleasure. Thank you.
Remember when you were young?
Cuts so deep, you'll need scuba gear. It's Waldman's Wardrobe of Musical Wonderfulness on KX93.5.
Yep, KX93.5 presents Waldman's Wardrobe of Musical Wonderfulness. Of course, the 9 o'clock hour every weekday is a music hour. Sometimes we have bands in, sometimes we don't. And today we've got Michael Waldman here, who's a local musicologist.
How are you, Mike?
Doing
good morning,
right?
I'm fine. Very excited to be on the new show.
Thank you. We've done this spot many times. But I think this is probably our 25th or 26th time that we've done this. We used to do it when I had the midday show, but we've brought you back here. How do you feel at 9 o'clock? Is it all right for you?
I'm wide awake. I've been up since 2 o'clock in the morning drinking coffee, just getting ready.
That makes two out of the three of us.
Yeah, very good. I'm still coughing, you know, to try and wake up. All right, well, Mike, you are a searcher of music, a seeker.
Yes.
Of music. And yes. You spend a lot of time on the internet.
Yes.
Looking for music.
And among other things.
Right. Not just nefariously looking for whatever else.
Yes.
He's looking for music. And the thing about it is that, of course, we've said this many times before, there's so much music out there, and everything is now, stuff that used to be rare when we were kids growing up, and you go, oh, wow, he's got that record by what, you know, the demo of this or the live version of that or whatever, whatever. It was such a big deal. Now, you just have to search Google. It took 2 seconds and you get the, but you have to know what you're looking for. That's the thing.
Yes.
That's what makes you special, my friend.
You just described me as a kid. That was me. Well, I was that guy.
I think that's a nice thing about you. You've got a sort of childlike love of music. Yes. And you no fear of searching for it.
And I today is songs and bands that Tyler loves,
which I can't argue with. I love that segment.
That was my strategy.
Yeah, Jason asked me a couple weeks ago what are 5 of my most favorite bands of all time, which of course is an extraordinarily difficult question to answer for anybody. So I will say, who knows if these really are my 5 favorite bands ever? But I do love the ones you've chosen. And I'm excited to hear the rare tracks.
And that was the test. Could I find something that you weren't aware of?
Yeah.
And I think it sounds
like you did, totally.
So first song today is Conquest by the White Stripes. And that was their final single.
Right.
And to commemorate it, they put it out on a series of 7-inch colored vinyl singles.
Cool.
With different B-sides. And this one is a B-side of that song. It's the mariachi version of Conquest.
Awesome. Should we play it and then talk about it? Is that what we do?
Yeah, let's do that, yeah.
All right. White Stripes, Conquest, mariachi version. Yeah, the White Stripes there with Conquest, the acoustic mariachi version. Great find, Mike Waldman. Love it.
I thought it was interesting because apparently it was a hit in the 1950s by Patti Page.
But before Jack White re-recorded it.
Yes, I think so. Wow. I think before Jack White was born.
Yeah, it would have been. She did How Much Is That Doggy in the Window, old Patti Page did. She's like a pop singer, but nowadays we think of those songs as kids' songs. That song, that mariachi version makes me think of... That's it's because it's Jack White and the White Stripes. It makes me think of that Jack Black movie, Nacho Libre. Remember that movie?
Yeah,
it was
totally
full of that kind of music.
That song's from Icky Thump, which is one of my favorite White Stripes albums in 2007. And I remember hearing it for the first time when I was listening to that album, and it totally stood out as something that didn't belong at all. Because it's very anti-White Stripes sounding. It doesn't sound anything like the White Stripes have ever done. Right. And I was like, this is odd. And it grew on me over time. And now knowing that it was somebody else's song makes a lot more sense. Fits as a mariachi version. Very cool.
That's great. So shall we move on to the next song?
Yeah, just as a reminder, we're digging very deep into Mike Waldman's musical wardrobe. He's got rare collections of music, and he's picked songs that tailored to me this morning and to my high school adolescent tastes. I love
it. He's kissing butt, actually, a little bit.
Yes.
I'm okay with it. I'm totally okay with it.
You're okay with it. You know what? I don't mind.
It won't last.
All right, what's next?
Benfold Fives.
Yeah.
And this song is an outtake off of their first album, and the song is called Emmeline. And apparently, they took it off of their first album because it had too many guitars in it. They wanted to be known as more of an acoustic piano-based band.
Yeah.
And this was a little bit more rocky. And I think it's a great song. Sounds beautiful. And never released before. It's on their Naked Baby photo albums, which is just all outtakes and all live material that the band picked by themselves, put it out right before they broke up for the first time.
And the first album that this didn't make it on, was that just the self-titled Benfold 5?
Yep.
Yeah, okay. And it's good timing on this because Ben Folds just came out with his new record last week called So There. So this is going to be a good retrospective of his entire career, I think. It's very cool.
Great.
So Emmeline is the name of the song, a rare track from Ben Folds 5, now on KX93.5.
Now we should September, but we could lose ourselves in crowds every day. Cause Emmeline don't walk in time. She's not the same, that's all you can say. When I've heard enough, I told myself that we learned our lesson, but I don't wanna walk away from Emmeline. They're talking now. Does she know? Someone should pay.
Scramble Live.
Very cool. Ben Folds 5, Emma Line, a rare track that Mike Waldman found for us in his musical wardrobe that didn't quite make the first album. It's so old school Ben Folds before the piano really took over. I mean, I know you said that one didn't get included because it was too much guitar and stuff, but today's Ben Folds songs are almost nothing but piano.
Well, that Ben Folds is a piano player, obviously, and the Ben Folds 5, when they first came out anyway, it was a funny name because there were only three of them.
Yeah.
I saw them, I opened for them in London years and years ago when the first record came out, and that was witty. They were called the Ben Folds 5. We'd never heard of them. They were like second on the bill, and I was third on the bill. And there were three who came out, and there's a piano player, bass player, and drummer, and they were great. It was a really sparse, unusual sound for that time. And I don't know much about him, honestly, Tyler, but I every time I hear a song by him, and the new record's great.
Yeah.
And I think, you know, this is a guy I should really spend more time listening to. He's a great songwriter. Reminds me of Joe Jackson or Elvis Costello or somebody like that. Really great.
Cool.
But did you think that the song was worth releasing? That's a good question.
I did.
You think so?
Yeah, yeah. And I'll tell you what's great about your section is, and what makes it different, is that who would have known about that song? Because it's not on the record.
Right.
And that's why this is a great segment, because we get to hear things that are not generally known about or released.
Yes.
And over the years, Ben's been good about releasing demos and weird tracks and stuff like that. I think he probably feels the same way we do in listening to his old stuff, saying, man, I really should have put this out there, and then does it.
And just being so nice to the fans to do that. You know, in my generation, when all those top-heavy, big old rock bands, no disrespect, Supertramp, Pink Floyd, you know, Genesis, when all those big old bands were going, they would never have released anything. They kept everything very close to their chest. It was pre-internet. It was pre-social networking. It was before people went, you know what? I'm just going to put out a YouTube video. I've just written this song.
Yeah.
I'm going to record it in my kitchen. But, you know, these days, that's the spirit of the age. In those days, everybody, it was like the Hollywood system where you never got to really find out what was going on with people.
And I think the bootleggers really created that market. The artists saw that the bootleggers were making a fortune with things that had slipped out the back door of a studio.
Yeah.
And all of a sudden they said, hey, we want that money. And they started putting it out. So it's great for us. Great for us music collectors. We get to hear everything.
Yes. And you don't have to be seen as something other than human in order to be famous. People like you to be a little bit human.
Yeah.
Yeah. In fact, it's great to hear the things that weren't released, and you can hear people developing their craft. You can hear how they weren't born geniuses. They really worked hard at it. And their first songs were just terrible.
Yeah.
And then they got better, and they got better, and they got better, and it really gives people something to work for.
Yeah, it's a good reminder that you kind of have to do that, right? You got to work for whatever it is.
Yeah, great respect to them as well for sticking to it and putting in the 50,000 hours or whatever it is, you know.
Yep.
That's really what's amazing about some of these guys. You know, the Beatles, did you see that the Beatles' first ever record contract was sold this week for $75,000? I think the deal was for like 500 quid or something, the original deal. And it was for a song called My Bonnie, which was a kid's song, which is a terrible record by the Beatles.
Huh.
Even, you know, much as we love the Beatles, but that was a, you know, terrible record.
Well, we're exploring rare tracks thanks to Mike Waldman, who's in studio now. And yes, they are a little bit tailored to me today. What's the last one, Mike?
The last one is Tegan and Sarah, who I have to admit I didn't know anything at all about. I'd never even heard of this band. And apparently they had they're Canadian, they're twins.
Canadian lesbians.
Canadian lesbians?
Lesbian twins.
Oh, my God, Canadian lesbian twins. I was at a website last night.
Looking at .com.
They never showed up.
CanadianLesbianTwins.com. And they had a big album in 2007 called The Con.
Mm-hmm.
And what was interesting about it was the first time that they started coming out with electric guitars and other instruments like lap steel guitars, and they had Death Cab for Cutie drummer Jason McGeer on it. It was a real a left turn for them, and people liked it. You know, it's kind of like when Dylan went electric. But in the concerts, they would sell a version of it that was pretty much all acoustic. It was called The Con Demo. They made 1,500 copies, and they would sell vinyl records. It was all the money went to charity. And now if you go on eBay, it's $100 a copy. You can get it for $100
a copy. Wow.
But here, you can get it for free.
Yeah.
So this is the track The Con, And it's their demo, the original demo for the con.
Awesome. Tegan and Sarah now on KX 93.5.
I listened in, yes, I'm guilty of this, you should know this. I broke down and wrote you back before you had a chance to forget, forgotten. I am moving past this, giving notice. I have to go, yes, I know that feeling, know you're leaving. I'm calling you safe, capsized, staring on the edge of safe.
Very cool. A demo from Tegan and Sarah called The Con from their album back in 2007. Mike Waldman is here with our musical wardrobe of wonderfulness. Hi, Mike.
Good morning.
Awesome picks today. We have the White Stripes, Ben Folds, and Tegan and Sarah, which if you looked at like my high school iPod, that would be the whole playlist right there. So
they're
awesome.
Very, you know, Tegan and Sarah, very interesting band because they are kind of indie. They're on Neil Young's label, Vapor. They're a very interesting band. They've been produced by Death Cab for Cutie's guy, Jason McGurr. And you can sort of hear Death Cab for Cutie, even in the demo. I think that's probably pre-Jason McGurr, even. And they've owned for, like, Lady Gaga and
yeah,
Katy Perry.
Yeah, they're a weird crossover.
It's a very odd thing. These women seem to really like them, even though you couldn't really pair them with Lady Gaga or Katy Perry. You wouldn't put them in the same musical genre. So
when I first saw them, I was 16, And it was probably one of my first like concerts by myself with my friends, you know, away from my parents ever. Yeah. And they opened for the Killers. And it was the one of the first big tours they ever did when their album, I believe it was So Jealous, came out in like 2004. And I saw the Killers and I had no idea who Tegan and Sarah were. And I saw them open and that's what made me a fan so very long ago, you know, these days.
That's great. That's really cool to know that that works for people, that opening acts do get recognition for being at, you know, at gigs. That's really great.
And I saw the Killers at Outside Lands last year, which was almost 10 years exactly after I saw them at that very small club called the Marquee Room in Phoenix when I was a teenager.
Yeah.
So it all comes full circle, man. It's cool.
Yeah, it's great.
Well, I'm glad you like these songs. I don't think I'll be able to keep up this energy. It's like a courtship. You know, it's going to fade off.
That's fine.
No, you've kept this up. I mean, this is only the first one on Daily Scramble Live, but you've been doing this for some time, Mike, and you always come up with the goods.
I have thousands of songs. Yeah. Thousands.
So what's what do you think you're going to do as a theme next? Have you thought about it?
Well, I have to say it's my hero's birthday coming up. My hero, Bruce Springsteen's birthday, and he's going to be 66. So
I was desperate to dive in with a joke.
I've been waiting a whole year.
Now that it's not just Jason in here?
No, I've been waiting. I don't want to overcome or overwhelm anybody with my love.
He does have a really powerful and slightly creepy love for Bruce Springsteen, I must say. But you're from the same sort of part of town, aren't you?
Yeah.
He's a New Jersey guy, and you're a Philly dude. And,
that's right.
You know, it's all
and
that.
That's where he became famous.
Yeah.
And there's a darkness on the edge of town, so that's the part of town I came from.
Well, we look forward to having you every week, Mike.
Hey.
Mike Waldman's musical wardrobe of wonderfulness. It's also going to be podcast online inside our Daily Scramble Live podcast, either on iTunes or on kx935.com. Thank you for the great picks today.
Thank you. Bye.